All right, so we're walking the dogs like we do. This is Monday before the Sandhagen font card. And coming up for the Luque RDA card, I'm really thinking of doing something completely different now. Nobody knows what I'm going to do. Matt's away on vacation, so I'm going to have a hard time trying to plan this. But the idea is you're going to get a full day of me making previews while I hook up the kayaks and go kayaking. And that's going to be the video. The entire Luque RDA video is going to be that. So I'm going to have to plan for it. I'm going to have to get the cameras. I'm going to have to get the mounts. I'm going to have to do editing that we've never done. And yeah, I think it's going to be pretty fun. Chuck, what do you think?
I don't think Chuck cares. And I don't think Yoda cares. Chuck? Chuck. Kayaking? Good boy.
Matt doesn't know what he's missing out on. It's a real shame he chose Europe over the lakes and rivers of New Brunswick. This week, MMA meets the water, trading the office for the kayak and the computer for a GoPro. So as they always say, let's get into it.
So you're probably sitting there watching, thinking, well, why kayaking? What would you need for MMA and kayaking? Well, of course, you need your kayak to start. You need to be safe. You got to have your life jacket. And then, of course, you got to have your paddle. And as you can see, you know, I used to be somebody that was fond of eye black. And I mean, it's supposed to be a really nice weekend. So why not rock a little bit of the eye black? And then I had to sit there and ask myself, is eye black the right choice? So then I had to rack my brain and I figured, let's go to the source and ask about the whole eye black, not eye black controversy.
So I'm going to have eye black on in the kayak. I think it's a good look. But what's the best look that I've ever had? Eye black and riding the pines at Eastern Canadian Championships in Quebec, or early 2000s highlights like Joey Fatone?
I think the highlights, but are we forgetting the flippy hair and the little dirt stash?
The people don't need to know about that. That's all right.
So awesome that she could kind of bring out some of the pictures of Fight Night Picks past. But when you look at it, I mean, listen, that kid that had home done highlights back in the early 2000s, he never thought that he would be the Blundstones type. He never thought that he would be the Subaru type, let alone the kayak type, let alone the type that has dogs. Something that we kind of refer to here as a granola. And son of a bitch, that kid became a granola. All right, we have a lot to cover. It's UFC Fight Night, Luque versus RDA. Let's get into it. And just like that, we're back with Fight Night Picks, getting set for UFC Fight Night, Luque versus Dos Anjos. As always, one half of your host and duo, Craig Allen. Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP. And this will be the 78th card from the UFC's Apex. And when we look at a card like this, I mean, listen, Vicente Luque is a 10th rank welterweight, and he's coming off a big time. And this is a first time knockout loss to Jeff Neal. He was out for a very long time. Nolan King over there doing the darn thing with MMA Junkie, saying that, yeah, or at least talking to Nevada State Athletic Commission head Jeff Mullen, and the fact that he had to really clear a lot of different protocols. There was a brain bleed in there, and he's taking on the former lightweight champ RDA, ranked number 9 in this division. And oh yeah, by the way, the surroundings might look a little bit different. We're kayaking this week and doing things a little bit crazy. It was supposed to be sunny, the rain's on the way, and you might see that behind me if I paddle a little bit this way. But overall, I mean, a suspension of 1 year for Vicente Luque coming back into action. And for RDA's last time out, he beat now middleweight Brian Bam Bam Barberena, big time second round submission win. We have a couple of debuts coming up this weekend. You're going to know one of them quite a bit. I mean, it is 23-year-old phenom Luana Santos. She's going to be taking on a really tough test in her UFC debut. And we also have the debut of Dana White's looking for a fight. It is Isaac Dulgarian, the Midwest Choppa. We got quite a few sophomore showings. I mean, Marcus McGee, not Humphreys McGee, not me and Bobby McGee, but we have Marcus McGee. He's coming out there. And you also have Jacqueline Amrim, the former LFA champ. She's going to be making that big time, second time out, and she's got a tough test ahead of her. We got a lot of fights. There's boats everywhere. We got a lot to talk about. You're not going to want to miss any bit of the action. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. So
So, you know what we're doing today? We're going kayaking and we're going to be talking about the fights. And when we kick it off with this card, you look at a couple of different fights that are added in on short notice, and you have Terrence McKinney, who right now, he's a little bit like an old pole start chainsaw that you inherited in a move. First little bit was great, we're chopping the wood, but now he's sputtering, the carburetor's plugged, and we're kind of fucked. So when you look at his fight coming up this weekend, he's replacing Groovy Lando Venata on about a week and a half's notice, taking on Money Mike Breeden out of Marathon MMA. Join me, why don't you? We got to put these kayaks up on the car. So listen, when you look at the fight that we have coming up, you look at a guy in Terrence McKinney, started off his pro career at 145 pounds. He's 7-1 coming into Dana White's Contender Series 2020, and he was taking on Sean Woodson in that one. You guys know Sean Woodson. He competed last weekend, and he was taking on Dennis Bazookia. Woodson looked pretty good, didn't he? Well, if you remember that fight that we had where Terrence McKinney, he's taking on Woodson. First round, fairly competitive. A lot of really good grappling by McKinney. Second round, seems to be going McKinney's way. He gets clipped by a couple of shots. He panics for a takedown. He gets back up. He eats that knee. And what's the main takeaway from that? It's a loss against a really good level of competition in Woodson. But for McKinney, it's interesting. When things go bad, he tends to go back to his roots. And he's a guy that wrestled, much publicized, North Idaho College. He was an All-American when he was wrestling. He obviously had the near-death experience. That's been much documented as well. But if you look at it for Terrence McKinney, when it goes bad, like against Gabriel Bonfim, he's going out there, he's initiating some of the wrestling, he gets submitted. His last time out, he took that fight, and that was against Nazem Sadikov, where McKinney is a pretty big underdog in that one. Sadikov looked pretty darn good. McKinney had a little bit of early success, and then after a bit of time, it was Sadikov taking over. Sadikov gets the win and gets the submission. So we do know quite a bit about Terrence McKinney. And when I say he's like the old buzzsaw, I mean, that guy can get it done. We've seen him get it done. The crazy fight against Drew Dober. The slip of the kick against Farah Ziam where, listen, I mean, it looked like it was going to be all McKinney right there. And then you have, I mean, you know, a giant win over Ziam. Against Drew Dober, it just doesn't go his way. But we've had some crazy performances so far out of him. And so if you look at McKinney, 117,000 Instagram followers. And just last week, he was in Salt Lake City. He was getting ready with Kevin Holland, which has got to be a little bit awkward because Holland beats Michael Chiesa. Terrence McKinney used to train at Sick Jitsu or a little bit around Sick Jitsu with Michael Chiesa. So a little bit weird there. But when we kind of turn the tables and you look at Mike Breeden, who was originally scheduled for this fight, like Mike Breeden's getting ready for Groovy Lando Venata. You're gonna get some of that wrestling. You're also gonna get some of the striking. And just like Lando Venata, Terrence McKinney's kind of had the same career. Things haven't necessarily gone his way. He's had some wild fights. And yeah, it just seems like things get away from him in some of these big opportunities. But for Breeden, he got a shot on Dana White's Contender Series as well. And he was taking on a really good level competition. It was a Canadian, Anthony Romero. Look at this. So when you're taking on Anthony Romero, what do you necessarily have to do? You have to avoid the wrestling. And what was Mike Breeden not able to do? Avoid some of the wrestling. Breeden has some more fights on the regional scene. We're talking the Furies and the like. He had some LFA experience as well. But when Breeden comes into the UFC, similar kind of situation to what McKinney's doing this weekend. It was on about 10 days notice. He was taking on Alexander the Great Hernandez. Breeden gets finished early in the first round. So his next time out, he takes on a bit of a tough test, a little bit more of an unknown, the karate man who likes to wrestle. It's Natan Levy. And what everybody remembers is Breeden loses that fight. 29-28 across the board. But what you're going to forget is where Levy wrestled in the first, Levy wrestled in the second and the third, James Crowes gave Mr. Breeden quite a bit of a pump up. And I know that's a little bit of a bad word. Again, Breeden's one of those guys that used to train out of Glory. Now he's out of Marathon MMA with Trey Ogden. You saw a big win there a couple of weeks ago. Miranda Maverick getting the win over Priscilla Cachoeira, everybody's favorite. But Mike Breeden got amped up, went out there, had himself a good third round, but he loses that fight. And it's one of those ones where Breeden's been out for a really long time, looking for a first win since 2021. He's been doing a lot of training. He actually was in the corner of one of his teammates, Zach Scoggin, here at FAC 20. You had him, you had Trey Ogden. So
you do like to see that out of Mike Breeden. Always staying active. He's still around the sport. Listen, there's motorcycles having fun in the background. We're just doing the damn thing. But when you look at a fight like this, I mean, Breeden's an interesting guy, kind of like Jorgen Castro. 3-4 as an amateur, 10-5 as a pro, all kinds of finishes. But what he does really well, where he gets his bread buttered, he plods forward, he leaves his weight on his front foot. He fights kind of like, and I know you might not like it because he just fought last weekend, but kind of a Nate Diaz light. So look out for that from Mike Breeden when he takes on Terrence McKinney. Very, very crisp boxing. McKinney on a little bit of a slide, coming in here on short notice, really, really short notice. And when I look at a fight like this, for me, I'm going to go with Terrence McKinney to get the win in this one, but it should be a really interesting fight. I mean, when you do look at it, these guys have Apex experience, and that Sadikov fight for Terrence McKinney was at the Apex. So really interesting one for these two guys, and an interesting one too for Marathon MMA. That stable of stars, yes, they can hit. They're starting to gain a little bit of traction. Should be a really good fight. We got some great ones on this card. Main event, Luke Cage taking on RDA. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Now the second fight that's on this card, a little bit of an odd one. We have Juliana Killer Miller, season 30 Ultimate Fighter winner at flyweight. She's gonna be taking on somebody who's born in this millennium. It's Luana Santos making that UFC debut. Shiny, shiny pro record, only one loss, and it's to a BJJ ace, and a lot to touch on in this fight, because if you're looking at it for somebody like a Juliana Miller, comes in with a lot of hype. She competes in a lot of big time grappling tournaments, and if you do look at her overall style, listen, the striking might not be the best to watch, but if you do consider it, I mean, her jiu-jitsu is almost second to none at 125 pounds. So when you consider somebody like Juliana Miller, you look at her last fight, she's what, like a 3-1 favorite taking on Veronica Hardy, who's coming off a giant layoff, and that's where things get a little bit tricky. You don't know what Hardy's gonna look like. We were kind of all over that fight, and it was really a bit of a strange one for Juliana Miller. Couldn't get any of the striking going, couldn't get the submissions going, and you know, you kind of look at it, you feel like Carl Cheffers. You're just throwing every single flag up there for somebody like Miller and vice versa for Hardy. So Miller doesn't get it done in that one. People lost every single bit of stock that they had in Miller. And we've had Ultimate Fighter winners recently, like not like Forrest Griffin, Stefan Bonner, not even like Neil Magny or Chiesa. We've had fighters like Zach Paunga lose to Muhammad Usman. Usman comes into the UFC, it's kind of been so-so. Paunga's been so-so. Brogy the Bear, we're going to talk about her later on in her fight with Yasmin Lucindo. Lucindo up at the top of this card. But when you look at it for somebody like Miller, it just, the game hasn't necessarily progressed. She's done a great job, Excite Fight commentator. She's also commentated with XMMA. So it's good to see her kind of branching out that way. But we just haven't really seen that big progression in her game so far. So for Miller, trying to branch out and get ready for a fight like this, like you go all the way back to 2021, she had a combat jiu-jitsu win down in Mexico over Montserrat Rendon, and she's about to make her UFC debut coming up in the not-so-distant future, up a weight class against Tamaris Vidal. So what have we seen out of Juliana Miller in camp? We see her training with Melissa Amaya, that's an undefeated fighter over with Combate, and we've also seen the fact that she's been getting ready with some big names. Brought in Matt's favorite fighter, Cindy Dandoa, for this part of the camp. So interesting pictures out there on Instagram for sure. But when you do look at it for her, a lot of arm punches, a lot of, you know, trying to initiate the clinch, trying to get things done her own way, and it hasn't really worked out for her. Again, a -390 favorite against Veronica Hardy. And when you look at a fight like this against Santos, Santos undefeated as an amateur over with SFT, she was 3-0 over there. She becomes a pro. She's not really beating the greatest level of competition. So then you have to think, is she like a Tainara Lisboa, who was accomplished at Muay Thai, came in against Jessica Rose Clark as an underdog, not a good level of competition in MMA, lit the world on fire? Or is she one of those fighters like maybe an AJ Dobson that's on this card who didn't beat a good level of competition and it hasn't really worked out for him in the UFC? We'll see that. But for Santos, you do like the fact that the striking is very good. And she does leave herself out there to get countered. That is one thing that I'll say. Throws really good kicks, has a nice tie stance, but the hands will drop a little bit for Santos. She is a judo black belt, and it's weird because in certain fights they say she's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, in others they say she's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So that all remains to be seen, but she trains out of Team Lucas Mineiro, and that's a big time gym. I mean, Lucas fought in the UFC, had a fight of the night, had a performance of the night bonus, but we know a fighter out of that camp that she trains with. It's Dredd, it's Luana Carolina, and that's a really good fighter to train with when you're getting ready for a fight like this. Again, you're trying to replicate some of the size, and Matt and I, we've talked about it for a while. Is Juliana Miller the biggest fighter at flyweight that you're gonna find? I mean, quite possibly. So for Santos, she's got a lot to do, but the fight that she had against Jenna Bishop is a big one. Bishop is the most accomplished jiu-jitsu practitioner you're gonna find in women's flyweight. She competes now with Bellator. I know she's 36, but that's because her, I guess her grappling career really, really took over. So when you look at it, like in that fight, I had it all three rounds for Bishop. One of the judges scored a 29-28 for Santos. But you look at the rest of these performances and they really, really are good. LFA 154, she's on the prelims. And she had a big reach advantage, big height advantage, and she was able to get it done in that one. She really is one of those pedigree type of athletes with that judo, with that jiu-jitsu, kind of like a Tabitha Ricci down a weight class, although Ricci had the Muay Thai to help her out quite a bit in her career. So when you're looking at somebody like Santos, not a lot of head movement. She will throw the jab, double, triple up. But the biggest thing that you gotta watch out for if you're Santos' opponent, it's that big overhand right. We've seen her knock down opponents in the past. Again, not the greatest level of competition. She is a very accredited player on the ground. She struggled in those positions against Jenna Bishop. And the most interesting thing, I think, for me, just as an aside, is the fact that you have Juliana Miller out of SoCal. Jenna Bishop's out of SoCal. But Juliana Miller didn't bring in Jenna Bishop in for this fight. Like, didn't bring her in to work some of the grappling. I mean, Cindy Dandois, I mean, bag it up, I guess. That's kind of fun. But if you do consider it, it's a little bit of an odd one. Also trained at the PI with Misha Tate, and that is a good fighter to train with getting ready for a fight like this. I think we got the second kayak strapped on there. Listen, some big time fights on this card. For me in this one, I'm gonna go with the much younger Santos, training out of Team Lucas Mineiro, as well as 011 MMA with Alon Bagoso, who was on an episode of Contender Series last summer, main evented against Farid Basharat. So some big time fights on this card, some big time grapplers in this contest. You're not gonna wanna miss any of that action at flyweight. And the big time main event at 170, Luque taking on RDA. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. So now we're on our way to the kayaking, which means it's a great time to chat about a big time fight. We have the return of the XFL champ, Montserrat Canejo Ruiz. She's going to be taking on the former LFA champ, Jacqueline Amorim. And for Amorim, made that UFC debut, came in with a full head of steam, undefeated as an amateur, undefeated as a pro, and you're taking on a Sam Hughes. And we knew it was going to be one hit, one kill jiu-jitsu. We knew how good Amorim was, just like Jenna Bishop, who took on Santos in the last fight. But when you're talking about somebody like Jacqueline Amorim, I know you guys, you're going to want to hear a little bit from Matt Allen. He's missing. He's on his European vacation. They can make a National Lampoon's about Matt Allen at this point. Let's throw it on over to the analysis of Amorim before that debut with Sam Hughes.
You really want to talk about the nickname?
Do you know what this fight makes me think of, though? This fight, to me, is like that game Grounders when you're in elementary school. You know, you want to jump up on all the different equipment because someone's going to go, Grounders, then you hear, because there's some liar in the group who's like, I wasn't on the ground, because they jump on the slide, but we all know they were on the ground. My whole point is, though, this fight to me is like a game of Grounders intensified in an MMA cage, because you had kind of alluded to it in the intro. Our new UFC debutante over here is very dangerous off of her.
Jacqueline Amorim, and I'm going to throw it up there for her accolades in jiu-jitsu. She's a BJJ black belt under Faustino Neto, and I got some of this information from BJJ Heroes. You might have heard of BJJ Heroes, the most notable
big website.
The websites, but you go down through it, that's the same coach that helped develop Carlos Diego Fajeda and one of Matt's favorite Brazilian Canadians, Bibiano Fernandez.
Wow.
He's able to do lots of great
artwork down there. But if you go down and look at it, she then moved with her then husband up to South Carolina, started training out of Team Checkmat. You can see it in the picture right there. That is the gym that she represents. And then you consider it, Matt. Third place 2017 IBJJF Worlds. In 2016, she was the second place in No-Gi Worlds. I mean, among other. Jacqueline Amarim was very, very, very accredited in not just regular Gi Jiu-Jitsu, but No-Gi as well. Switched gears and then became a professional mixed martial artist. She's finished all six of her wins, all of them inside of the first round, five of them by submission. In four different types of submission wins,
too. And that's the impressive thing to see. Like, I know I really like Damian Maia. I talk about his jiu-jitsu a lot. But Maya's a guy who you really think of with a rear naked choke, right? That was what he was always trying to build to on the ground. But for Amarim, it is really nice to see her fish for different types of submissions. And again, that's going to be very important in this matchup.
For Jacqueline, we haven't seen her out of the first round. And even in some of these fights, let's go down through them. Her fight against at LFA 101, you go back that far against Taisha Gandhi. She was a minus 2,000 favorite.
It's a big favorite.
She had no head movement, ate every single jab, and then in 10 seconds goes all the way across the cage with her arms out, gets the takedown, and earns the submission win by a rear naked choke. Her next time out at LFA 110, she's taking on the first of two Canadians in her career, 34-year-old, tricky fighter, name of Megan Owen. And in that fight, she throws one left hook and knocks her out, and it's done really, really quick. So that's just a lot of fun.
Would you agree with me, though? I do think her foundational skills, although they don't make up for an amateur background or anything like that, they are an amount of experience that I think will help her in the UFC.
She doesn't throw any volume when she strikes. She doesn't move her head.
But that's fine. We've seen people like Melissa Gatto make it to the UFC and have success based on a deadly jiu-jitsu game facing primary wrestlers and take her down.
She was able to switch it up.
But I get that. She was able to switch it up later on in her career after long layoffs and stuff. I just mean, there are fighters out there who can win the first handful of fights just based on that foundational skill set. I'm not saying she's going to make it to the top 15 from this, but I do think that BJJ is lethal enough to get wins.
Amarim getting the belt the first time she tried for it. It was supposed to be at LFA 118. The quote is, unable to meet the sanctioning requirements from the California State Athletic Commission has been canceled. So they had to move her versus Loveth Young to LFA 125. In that fight, Amarim's able to get the takedown really easily. But when she goes to pick Young up, what does Young do? Two hands in the cage. So referee John English, friend of the show, he takes a point. And ultimately, Amarim's able to go out there, get it done, get the submission win. And then defending the belt against Nichols, 36-year-old Canadian, just taking on old Canadians. They do nothing for the majority of the first round. And then as it goes on, you have Amarim that's able to really kind of scrap things out, getting that win out there once more. So for Montserrat Canejo, it's been a little bit weird. We see how good Amarim is with jiu-jitsu, but with Canejo, you don't really see a lot of success, you know, like she's had in MMA, let alone women's MMA. I mean, yeah, we saw scarfhold throws from Ronda Rousey, but she was so good at judo. For Canejo, that scarfhold to get the fighters down to the mat, that's just rarely ever seen. And we did see her do that to great effect against Cheyenne Bays or Cheyenne Vlismas at this point in their matchup. So you had a Canejo win there, but then it's been really, really weird. And we haven't seen her in some time. Now, her last time out, she took on Amanda Lemos. She's next in line for title shot. And she got knocked out. She got knocked out six ways to Sunday. Chris Tyone was not Ward Tyone on that night. Canejo did pop right back up, but there were about four or five shots there where Lemos landed, and it was all she wrote. So Canejo now, she comes back into this one, and it's a big-time opportunity for her to get back in the win column. She's been off for a very long time. That last win was a very long time ago. And for Canejo, what you like to see is she's been working in the gym. She's been at Enthrom Gym in Tijuana. She's been a little bit at Kings MMA in California. So good to see her still working around the gyms. But, you know, she is a pressure fighter. A seven-time national wrestling champ is Canejo. And again, she was a plus 400 against Lemo. She wasn't necessarily thought of as somebody who's going to win that matchup there. So when you do look at this one,
Amram with the jiu-jitsu, Conejo with a little bit of that wrestling. I'd really like to see who you guys are feeling in this matchup, because it's definitely not an easy one for Conejo, where I think she's a better striker than Amram. Amram's somebody that leaves her head on the center line, a little bit like an Amanda Hibas, where it's all pressure, boom, we're into the clinch, boom, we're into some of that wrestling. We'll see if Amram's able to have that advantage, because as we said, that one round cardio, it does get tested quite a bit in fights like these. So it's going to be a really, really tough one for either fighter, a tough one to try and make a pick on. Matt Allen in this one, let's see who he's got in the fight. Matt Allen is feeling one Jacqueline Amram to get the win, and Matt was with Sam Hughes getting ready for that last fight. I have Jacqueline Amram in this fight as well, but this is Montserrat Conejo's fight to lose, so it does feel. Like to see what you guys are thinking about in this one. We get some big time matchups on the card. You are going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say. Let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, heavyweights on the cusp of the top 15. A couple of guys that competed on Dana White's Contender Series not that long ago. We have the former Octagon heavyweight champ, Martin Badis Budaj, representing Slovakia. Back-to-back weeks for Slovakia. You had Ludwig Klein getting that big win last weekend against Ignacio Bahamondes. And moving it forward, Budaj is going to be taking on Michigan's own Scorpion Fighting Systems. We're talking about Josh Parisian. When it goes well for Josh Parisian, the wrestling works itself out. You remember his performance bonus when he took on Alain Badeau. He got lit up in the first round, and then in the second round, he rallied back. He utilized that wrestling, and he had a big-time advantage there. And both of these guys, some of the bigger guys you're going to find at heavyweight. Budaj's a little bit like Derek Lewis. We're cutting down to make the 266 or the 265. Josh Parisian, a bigger guy as well. But if you look at it, I mean, Budaj was an Octagon champ before Octagon was cool. Way back when ONE Championship was getting their shine with the World MMA Awards and, listen, getting at least a nomination for promotion of the year. But this year, Octagon taking that top-ish slot. Might not win it against the KSWs and the UFCs and the PFLs of the world, but awesome to see that for Octagon. And when Budaj was getting it done there, he had a little bit of a finish against Kamil Minda. He was losing the first round handily, getting outboxed. And then in the second round, it was like when Alexander Emelianenko took on Eddie Bankson. That kind of phantom jab. Minda falls down. That's the end of the fight. So Budaj moves it forward. He gets on to Contender Series 2021. And he's taking on Lorenzo Hood. And in that one, it was a slobber knocker. It was sloppy. They were just going at it, throwing absolute hammers. But Budaj pressures it forward. He ends up landing a big time shot up against the fence. He ends up getting the finish. So Budaj gets the win there. And so far in the UFC, he's undefeated. And he's looked really, really good. If you only look at his record on paper, think about the fights that he's had. Chris Barnett, in that one, they're going back and forth. We're having a rip-roaring good time. Budaj's pressuring the action. It seems like Chris Barnett is pretty injured in that one. And his corner sends him out for the third round. So Budaj lands a knee up against the fence. Barnett drops. And then there's a lot of legal shots at the back of the head. And referee Dan Mergliotta doesn't take a point. So we go to a technical decision, and all three judges score at 30-27 for Budaj. He then goes into a fight against Lukasz Drewski. In that one, 11 had it 29-28 for Drewski on MMA decisions. There was some 30-27s, and one scored the fight for Budaj. Ultimately, Budaj gets a split decision win. He got completely outstruck in that fight, and he wasn't successful with the takedowns. He wasn't successful with a lot of his clinch work. And that's a weird one, because we've seen Drewski even struggle big time against Carl Williams, who's a good wrestler in his own right. So Budaj carries it forward. His last time out against Jake Collier, gets outstruck in the first round, and then that brawn that he has wins him the second and the third. So when you look at this fight, both guys are actually net negative strikers in their UFC careers. And for Budaj, it's a lot of box to pressure forward, some really heavy leg kicks when he does decide to land them. And if he has a lot of success, it's not really the greatest fight to watch when you're watching a Martin Budaj fight. When you look at a guy like Josh Parisian, again, when he's having success, he's winning with his grappling. When he's losing fights, he's struggling in the grappling. You go back to Parisian's last fight against Jamal Pogues, gives up 5 takedowns in that one. You look at the wins that he has. I already mentioned the Badeau fight. You look at the loss. He's taking on Dontael Mays, and he's getting a cup to the mouth. It was a little inappropriate, but you did have that big-time
I don't know, slam-a-jam-a-humpa-rumpa there from Lord Kong, Dontale Mace. So when you consider a fight like this, I mean, it could go either way. But to me, I just feel like Martin Budai's got a little bit more in terms of those finished product skills that could get him win. I mean, Josh Parisian's a guy, fought in Contender Series a couple of times, had that spinning shot against Greg Rebello that got him win, but that wasn't good enough. They wanted him on the Ultimate Fighter. He is ultimately an interesting fighter, but again, for me, I'm going to go with Budai in this one, and I know Matt's in agreement on this one. So both of us going with Slovakia's Martin Budai, and now I think it's about time to carry these kayaks into the water. Here on the water in the kayak, getting ready. We'll see if I can put it out maybe a little bit. We got Fire Francis Marshall, or Francis Fire Marshall, and he is a fireman. That much is true. But when you look at Francis Marshall, undefeated as an amateur, undefeated as a pro, but he lost his last matchup against William Gomez by split decision. So for Marshall, a quick turnaround from this spring's fight against Gomez, he's now going to be welcoming into the UFC. It is Isaac Dalgarian, the Midwest Choppa, training out of Marathon MMA. And listen, you've been missing Matt. He's been on his European vacation. So Matt Allen gets a little bit of time off, but we previewed Isaac Dalgarian's debut when he's supposed to take on Dan Argueta. Let's actually get you up to speed with who Isaac Dalgarian is and get you ready for this fight when he's gonna be taking on Francis Marshall.
And a welcome to the UFC. It's the rookie debut of the Midwest Choppa, Isaac Dalgarian, the former FAC champion, taking on Francis Marshall. But for Isaac Dalgarian, if you do look at it throughout his overall tenure, both as a pro and as an amateur, he's putting a very, very slick and sneaky record out there, and he is undefeated, 4-0 as an amateur, 5-0 as a pro. All of these fights with KC Fighting Alliance and FAC, you're going to know that promotion for sure, and he's also competed for the majority of his career out of Glory MMA and Fitness. Now, throw it out there, the tweet from Alex Bakunin. And if you do look at it, there's a lot of guys that have been training at a Glory MMA and Fitness, but for reasons that we've all seen out there on the Twitter sphere, they're all training out of Factory X Muay Thai. So an interesting mix there for Dalgarian. But coming into this matchup, Matt, what a lot of people might not realize is, although this is Isaac Dalgarian's UFC debut, he is a 2012 Freestyle National participant. You can find him on Flow Wrestling there. He also spent time at Notre Dame College, and he kind of bounced around with his collegiate and university wrestling career.
The one thing I do like out of Dalgarian, I will say, yes, he does have good wrestling. I do like the way he can hide some of his strikes with his wrestling. And what I do like about him is he'll square up sometimes on the feet, but it doesn't seem unintentional. It's not like I'm getting overexcited and that's why I'm doing this. It's just a good level of footwork for a guy who's only his age. And that's the thing. He's what, 5-0 at 26 years old? Like, I genuinely believe Dalgarian's going to have a decent UFC career where we could see him get better from time in and time out because he does have a good foundational skill set.
And is he an Elk Boys athlete? Do we know that at all? Because he was on Dana White's Looking for a Fight his last time out. He beats TJ Britton. He wins the belt over there, the featherweight strap. And if you do look at it, that was supposed to be the card that Nelk was going to sign a fighter. And then Dalgarian did an interview with Nelk with OG Shawnee Mack, getting slapped by Nate Diaz, and it's not really clear. So I don't know if he's an Elk Boys guy or not, but regardless out of that, for Dalgarian, not a good level of competition at all. 12-8 is the combined opponent record as a pro, and Britton was 7-2, so you can kind of do your little subtraction there. You can see that it's not all that good, and even then, Britton was 39 years old in the matchup. Now, all of his wins are by first round finish, and if you do look at it, I wrote down fast, powerful grappling, and he is the type of guy that he's going to get into mount very, very quickly, and then you make your mistake. You either get ground and pounded out, or you give your back and he submits you. Isaac Dalgarian, for what it's worth, bad level competition, beating guys the way that you should, but the way that Dalgarian fights, and you're going to find it, Nick Fiore's very, very similar that we're going to see on this card. They cinch things up very, very quickly on the ground. I like the fighter that Dalgarian is.
So Isaac Dalgarian, pretty good fighter, a lot of really early first round finishes. Francis Marshall for this one. You know him as the Kurt Pellegrino protege. You know him for his pressure. He'll box the clinch, he'll take you down, and he is a deadly finisher. If he gets to the ground, but you remember his fight against Matthews on Contender Series, that was a really hyped up fight. Marshall gets the win there, gets the contract as a very young entrant into the 135 pound division. And when you look at it, I mean, William Gomez is a hell of a striker. You know exactly what his lineage is in Sonda when he came into the UFC out of France. So an awesome fight in this one, and it really is a tough pick. I mean, Delgarian is such a finisher and he has such good wrestling, but what does he look like after the first round? I don't necessarily know. So for me, trying to make a pick in this one, again, I have a hard time. It could be one that you figure out at the end of the week on question mark kicks, a little bit of a teaser there. Both of us in this fight, though, I know Matt is as well, going with Fire Marshall, Francis Marshall, to get the win. And it should be a great fight. I mean, these lower weight classes are absolutely on fire lately. It should be an awesome, awesome matchup. So look forward to that one. Toss us a like on the video if you will. We got some big time ones coming up next that you're not going to want to miss. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. This weekend's, but why, fight coming up at 135 pounds, we have JP Bayes, a man who's been knocked out not once, not twice, not three times. He's been knocked down eight times in his last three fights. And JP Bayes is going to be taking on Marcus McGee. Now, if you do consider it for JP Bayes, his last win was back in 2020 on Contender Series over now 10-9 Jacob Silva. And what got JP Bayes to the dance? You might be asking yourself that. Why would I even consider him in this fight? It was his offensive wrestling at 125. He's a former EFC flyweight champ. Just like Jake Hadley, who fought last weekend, got himself into some bad positions against Cody Durden. Just like, I mean, who else? Like, throw out a name. Cameron Simon had good success in the lower weight classes with EFC. So for JP Bayes, good wrestling, but he's gotten a little bit wild in these fights. And he started out in the UFC, like he had Fortis lineage with Saif Saud, moved it down to Vegas, training at Extreme Couture. So we'll see how it all plays out for JP Bayes, because when he sees red, the wheels really do fall off. And again, those big three losses, you look at the level of competition, it is pretty high, but you're getting knocked down eight times in three fights. It's kind of a surprise that this fight's taking place. Kind of similar to Daniel Da Silva Lacerda. That guy just keeps getting finished, but keeps getting fights. So if you look at this, I mean, for Marcus McGee, performance of the night bonus in a short notice debut during the week that was against Jurny Newsome. And I know you guys want a little bit of flavor. Matt's over in Europe, a little bit of pasta sauce over there. You want to hear from him. Let's hear a little bit from Matt Allen about this matchup and about Marcus McGee.
And in steps, Humphries McGee. I'm talking about the maniac, Marcus McGee. And I don't know if he likes jam bands, but what I do know is that you might have heard of him. And so, for those who are kind of uninitiated out there, for some of the fight fans that might not recognize the man on the right-hand side of our screen that's not wearing a hat, the man with the hair, I'm talking about Marcus McGee. You might know him from the Instagrams. You might know him as Sean O'Malley's training partner. Exactly. But when I look at a guy like Marcus McGee, who's been featured heavily with Kyler Phillips, with a guy like Mario Bautista, and with Sugar Sean O'Malley, McGee's kind of been able to mold out his own fighting. And if you've seen him, he's competed with a few different organizations, whether it's Ruff MMA. He main evented his pro debut in 2020 with Ruff. Valentine's Day Massacre was the name of the show. He main evented that one. Ruff had a couple of road to one, and that's one championship cards. After that, he got a couple of wins there. Those are kind of co-promoted, spearheaded a little bit by Rich Franklin. And then if you look at it, LFA, he also fought with Cajuns versus Cowboys, or Cowboys versus Cajuns. We talked about that promotion recently where Aaron Phillips had competed with them, and that was his step into the UFC, and a couple of bouts with the LFA. But when you look at a guy like Marcus McGee, obviously he's going to have a height advantage. He's going to have a reach advantage using those metrics that we've seen from the LFA. Now, it should be noted that this is a catchweight bout of 140 pounds, because McGee is in on Wednesday night getting set for the fight that's on Saturday. But Matt, when we look at this fight, I mean, where McGee has struggled, and just in that one loss to Nascimento, a.k.a. Militia, that's what they called him over there, and he had like the metal Militia tattoo on his back, and you know what? For that, for Militia, I thought, why not
break out the Dirty Craig jersey. Let's just get crazy with the names on our backs, Matt, for the Craig Kimbrel shout-out. But when you look at a guy like Marcus McGee, Matt, does he fight like Brian Kelleher? Not at all. I like how he moves forward with his combinations. I will say that. He's not a guy like Kelleher who's going to use the combinations as much to set up his wrestling. But when he moves forward, when he's really able to go downhill with his shots, let's put it this way. If Journey Newsom finds his back up against the cage, this is going to be a really difficult fight for him because McGee is an interesting fighter. He can fight really well from the southpaw stance. He will switch stances as he is throwing combinations moving forward. And that's a really nice thing to see. And it does show that he does have not only a high level of training partner, but that's the thing that I do like about McGee. I was a little worried when I initially saw 32 years old, almost 33, coming into the UFC. I think this is a great matchup for him, though, coming into. When I look at a guy like McGee, I went down through and I watched every single fight. There's 7 pro fights so far from the rough days.
That's pretty darn exciting, I must
say. All the way up to the LFA. And I mean, I can break them all down in unison, but what I did have in my notes, so when he's fighting from southpaw, he's throwing hooks, he's working his boxing to the body, to the head.
And
he's,
if I may, he does like to lead with the left straight and not always set up with the jab. I kind of like that.
He doesn't throw a jab. He'll throw the left straight instead of the jab. Marcus McGee doesn't throw a jab whatsoever. He throws the left straight. He throws hooks from both hands. And then he also, what I had in here is when he's from southpaw, he throws a roundhouse to the body. When he switches over to orthodox, it's only to land 2 strikes. It's leg kicks and teep kicks up the middle, and that's it from the orthodox stance. He rarely will throw his hands from orthodox. He'll then switch back over to southpaw.
He will step, though, as he's moving forward. That's why it does kind of look like
that. When he's on the defensive for McGee, the other way, if he's trying to close distance, he'll throw a flying knee to close distance and drop his hands. He'll also throw kicks, drop his hands, and throw naked kicks where he's liable to getting taken down from either double leg or single leg positions. And I had that in my notes against Nascimento. He goes and throws a kick, and then he's completely naked. Nascimento runs the pipe all the way across the cage, gets a takedown, and then he kind of gives up on it. He, like, stacks guard, gives up. They both get back up. But it is McGee after a lot of hand fighting, after a lot of kind of cross faces. It was almost like a neck crank. They considered it a rear naked choke, but that's his one loss. Apart from that, though, in certain fights, it was, what, his last fight that he had over with the LFA, and then it was his first fight. He fought with his hands really, really low to the ground, where striking defense was either backing up with his hands down to his left, or just backing straight up with his hands down.
So Marcus McGee, he's billed as a Paragon fighter, a semi-professional skateboarder. It's kind of like Ricky Bobby's dad in Talladega Nights, an amateur tattoo artist maybe as well. But if you look at it for Marcus McGee, great forward pressure, drops Journey Newsom. He was working the body, he was working the head, he's got great kicks. And when I look at a fight like this, it's a little tough because, again, you get fighters like this, they'll lose quite a few fights in a row, and then they finally get a favorable stylistic matchup. We talked about it with McGee against Old Metal Militia. He struggled with the takedown in that one. So if Baze can work in the wrestling, Extreme Couture might finally be that opportunity for Baze to get a win like that. But for me, I do like Marcus McGee in the matchup. And I know Matt has McGee in this one as well, but it should be a really interesting one because can Baze get back on the horse, or does he go a dreaded 0-4 to start, maybe end his UFC career? Both of us in this one going with McGee to get the win. Probably not the craziest pick that you've seen out there, but the next matchup that we have, Josh Fremm taking on Jamie the Night Wolf. Ah! Pick it. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Middleweight action on Saturday. Fords 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're in. 3 fights you're in, I guess. For Jamie Pickett, the Night Wolf, the first 2 times unsuccessful against Charles Byrd and Puna Soriano, but his 3rd time out, took on Jonathan Potty, hit him with a Super Saiyan combo. There's about 40 shots in that one, and Pickett ends up into the UFC. Now, it's been a little bit of a stinker of a run so far. 2-5, the overall record in the UFC for the Night Wolf, Jamie Pickett. His last time out, was there a cup shot? I don't know, but he did take on Bo Nickel, main card of a pay-per-view, so hopefully he was compensated for his troubles. Thou doth protest, but he didn't get the win in that one and didn't get it overturned. So for Jamie Pickett, gets to move it forward against the Big Yinzer, the former Slippery Rock University wrestling man, Josh Fremm. And for Josh Fremm, a known commodity at this point, but his UFC tenure, much like Jamie Pickett's, It's been a little bit lackluster. Now, for Fremd, you look at it, he fought in that LFA middleweight tournament, the four-man tournament, knocks out Bruno Oliveira, fights Gregory Rodriguez in the finals, loses to Gregory Rodriguez. So Fremd builds his way back up. He actually had three main events with the LFA. He continued to move it forward. And then you have Fremd, his last time out, finally getting a win. And for Fremd, I mean, you look at it so far, you look at the career numbers, and let's break it down a little bit. I mean, 31% takedown defense in the UFC. He defended 3 of 11 Fluffy Hernandez takedowns. That's not good. He then went out there, defended 1 of 4 Treshawn Gore takedowns. That's not good. That was one of those pop his head off guillotines, and I'll talk about one later on in the card, but he did get finished in that one. So he defends everything from Hernandez in terms of submissions, loses a decision there, but he can't defend a lot of the takedowns. He struggled with Treshawn Gore, and you're gonna go, well, Craig, you're telling me this guy's a wrestler but he struggles with grappling? It does happen sometimes. So his last time out, takes on SD Dumas. He is a pretty big underdog. He defends a Dumas takedown. He gets it down. He gets a big time win over Dumas. So riding pretty high. And I listened to an interview that Fremd did with James Lynch. I listened to one that he did with JHK as well. And he said that, and that was, sorry, Sports Keto with James Lynch. And he said that this is the last fight on his deal, so he's got to make something happen. He trains with an all-star stable, a great cast at Factory X, headlined by last weekend's big-time winner, first-round finish. I mean, who was it? It was Dustin Jacoby. So he trains with Jacoby, Anthony Smith, Cody Brundage. The list goes on and on about the bigger guys that train at Factory X. So a big opportunity for Fremd, a guy that can strike long from the outside but throws kind of less than ideal volume, and we won't talk about it by the numbers, but he does throw less than ideal volume in his fights. And when you look at a guy like Jamie Pickett, 13-9 the overall record, 9 wins by knockout, 4 by decision, 5 first round finishes, but you look at a guy like Jamie Pickett and you go, geez, what's the knockdown ratio? 1-4 to 4 against, that's not very good. 3.16 significant strikes landed per minute to 4.23 received, and it hasn't been all that great. He's been performance bonuses, Jamie Pickett, by Bo Nickel, performance bonused by Kyle Daukaus as well. That was a big first round finish loss. So for him, if you look at it for Pickett, he trains out of a nice gym. I mean, Jim O, John Salter's there, Joe Selecki, a lot of big time grapplers. Port City Performance, yeah, that's a gym that he's trained out of for long spurts in his career. A North Carolina guy, and we'll see if Jamie Pickett can bring it back together in this matchup. But for me, and I know for Matt as well, both of us in this fight going with Josh Fremd. I got some good motion going. We got some clear skies right now, enjoying a day out on the water, kayaking, motorcycles off in the distance, everybody having a good time. Some big time fights on this card, including that welterweight marquee. You've got RDA taking on Vicente Luque. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Couple of older prospects looking to save their respective spots on the UFC roster. We have coming up this weekend Tafon Dadon Chukwe, and he's going to be taking on AJ Dobson, a guy who's represented strong style as well as immortal martial arts. We've seen Mark Coleman in his corner multiple times, and if you watched AJ Dobson on Dana White's Contender Series, you heard Mark Coleman say, "Finish him, AJ!" about 50 damn times, and finish him AJ he did. But AJ Dobson, a guy that will come at you with a lot of boxing, and that really is the specialty. He'll box to clinch, and then maybe he'll get the takedown. And you saw it on Dana White's Contender Series when he was taking on Arkagan, struggle with it. He was able to go out there, get that no hook, rear naked choke. The geese love it over there on my side. But when you look at it for Dobson, no hook, rear naked choke, he's been able to get a few of those in his career. We've also seen the knockout over Kalen Hill. First shot that lands for Dobson, a right hand. 2 seconds in, Hill's down on the mat, and then he pops back up. Dobson just goes out there and finishes him. So what we've seen from Dobson in the UFC has been a little bit more of a reserved approach. And when he took on Jacob Malkoon, where is he? I haven't seen it, Jacob Malkoon. I don't know where he's been. He hasn't fought in a very long time. Off of his last win, and yeah, he had that loss to Brandon Allen, but so be it. So if you look at it for Dobson, he was able to defend takedowns in the first round, win the first round against Malkoon with his boxing, but then he couldn't defend the takedowns round two, round three. His last time out, he takes on Armin Petrosyan, the striker. What are you going to want to do?
take him down. What is he trying to do? Take him down. And he gets three, but Petrosian popped right back up, and he was able to strike on the outside. And Dobson couldn't figure out his boxing to make it competitive on the inside. So it'll be interesting to see how Dobson makes out in this one, because I could see him having a little bit of a wrestling advantage against Chukwe. But Chukwe's a really interesting guy, because you got to consider it. You can't forget it. Chukwe was 3-0 as an amateur. He had a great Muay Thai career as well. But if you consider it, like, he was 3-0 as a pro. He beats William Knight, who was on a UFC developmental deal off of Contender Series. They didn't give him the real McCoy, but you had Chukwe knocking out Knight. Then Chukwe ends up on Contender Series, knocks out Al Matavao. Then he comes into the UFC, and he gets a big-time win. He drops a fight against Jun Young Park, the Iron Turtle, who's on the cusp of the rankings. And we just really haven't seen the greatest out of Chukwe. His last two fights, he's beating, soundly beating, Azamat Mirzakhanov, who's now ranked at 205. And then his last time out, well, what happens, Craig? I mean, why is he beating him, but it's a loss on his record? Well, in the third round, Mirzakhanov rushes across, lands a flying knee, and, I mean, that was pretty much all she wrote. But the last time out for Chukwe, he's favored at about a minus 140 clip against Carlos Alberg at a City Kickboxing, and there was a strong, almost like a pawing left hand from Alberg that hits Mr. Chukwe, and that's pretty much the end of the fight. So what do we know out of him? Well, he's an interesting case because he's billed is Chukwe as an orthodox fighter, but he'll switch it up quite a bit. And this is first action since June of last year. So a really lengthy layoff for Chukwe. He trains at a Team Lloyd Irvin, but you've seen a lot of cross training for him and his striking team out of Crazy 88 MMA. And you might go, why do I know Crazy 88 MMA? Well, it's because of Matthew Semmelsberger. And how was his last fight? It was what it was. But Crazy 88, kind of an up-and-coming gym. Coach John Del Bruge getting it done over there. So if you look at it for Chukwe, again, the road, it is what it is. He beats Mike Rodriguez. And yeah, that was definitely a good one. And Chukwe looked like the version that we saw against Jamie Pickett when he made his UFC debut, when you had Chukwe taking on Rodriguez. A lot of volume, mixing everything in, backing up his opponent. And don't forget, Dana White was comparing Chukwe to Mike friggin' Tyson after Chukwe beat Al Matavao. So I'd really like to know who you have in this matchup, because I don't think we've seen the best of AJ Dobson in the UFC, but I think he's just a little bit unrefined compared to a guy like Tafon Chukwe. I know Matt's in agreement on this pick. Both of us going with Tafon, Dodon, Chukwe to get the win. We got some big time fights on this card. Next one, Pollyanna Viana taking on Yasmin Lucindo. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. And it's a women's strawweight showcase just outside of the top 15 coming up this weekend. We have Brazilian powerhouse Yasmin Lucindo, that short pit stop at flyweight, her last time out. She's taking on Instagram Thirst Trap, an absolute winner, winner, chicken dinner. Pollyanna Viana, and I have my wife doing the intros to these, or at least filming on the other side of the camera, not on the GoPro. She's wondering why I'm saying Instagram Thirst Trap for Pollyanna Viana. It's really awkward when you have to look up what camp she's training out of on her Instagram, because there are some racy pictures that are out there. But for Viana, she's been on a crazy, crazy win streak. And I thought in my head getting ready for this one, big cloud above me, so that one's kind of freaky, but I thought getting ready for this, I have a bad read on Pollyanna Viana. So I went back and I watched our predictions for her fights. I picked her to beat Emily Whitmire. I picked Mallory Martin to beat Viana. I picked Tabitha Ricci to beat Viana. And then I picked Viana to beat Jinyu Fry. I'm actually 3-1 in picking fights for Pollyanna Viana of late. And she's a really tricky fighter because she will accept the ground for quite a while. Somebody's doing a, what do you call those? Somebody's doing a gender reveal behind us. So that's interesting. I'll try and float that into the picture. I don't know if we're gonna be able to see it. Maybe my wife will film it. A lot of yellow, pink smoke going on in the background over there. All right, so gender reveal going on in the background. A lot of pink smoke out. That's interesting. That can't be good for the environment. But with Pollyanna Viana fights, she came onto the radar with Jungle Fights with a knockout win over Amanda Ribas. And I'll kind of overlay some pictures out of that fight. But she's interesting because she can strike. We've seen that. She can grapple. We've seen that.
wrestling isn't really at the forefront of her game, so she struggles with the takedown defense, but it's almost by design, like Mackenzie Dern. And when she's in full guard, she can really open up her submissions. You saw that against Mallory Martin. You've seen that throughout the career of Pollyanna Viana. But when she accepts the bottom position, like she did against Tabitha Ricci, it didn't really work out all that well for her. So if you do consider it for Viana, I mean, 13 wins, 13 by finish, 5 by knockout, 8 by submission, and 12 of those 13 wins by finish, well, all of them for Viana, 8 of them in the first round. So it'll be interesting to see, or sorry, 12 of them in the first round. It'll be interesting to see what we get out of Viana in this one. The good full guard, but we haven't seen her since November of last year when she beat Jinyu Fry. 722,000 Instagram followers for Pollyanna Viana. So again, hopefully my wife under there, over there, she understands a little bit more of that Pollyanna Viana game. But when you look at a fight like this, for Yasmin Lucindo, she's kind of billed as, or she was put in a main card spot in Lucindo's UFC debut. That was against a former Combate champ, Yasmin Jauregui. And people were saying Jauregui, myself included, might be a future title challenger until her last time out where she did get finished. So for Jauregui, a little bit on the downturn. But for Lucindo, it's a bit of a bummer because after the Jauregui-Lucindo wild fight of the night, well, it just so happened that Landwehr versus Onama was the next fight on the card. So they didn't get the bonus, and then Landwehr-Onama was a possible fight of the year. But what do we know about Lucindo? Well, we know that the takedowns, they are very good. You know what? Why don't we just throw it on over to a clip of Yasmin Lucindo so you can get a little bit of Matt. We've been missing Matt out here in the open water.
For Yasmin Lucindo, different origin story and not as good. It's unfortunate, but in 2021, Guillerme Cruz wrote an article on Lucindo. The title was MMA prospect Yasmin Lucindo turned pro at age 14 to defend mother aunts from domestic violence. And it's unfortunate, and it's crazy. And for Lucindo, she's a main training partner of one, Matt's favorite fighter, Vina Jandjidoba. So you do love to see that. But for Lucindo, I looked at this as, okay, she gets into MMA as, you know, a Muay Thai artist. And then I go watch her fights, having that knowledge in my head, and I thought, what the f***? She's not a Muay Thai artist at all. She throws a really good right kick to the body, up kind of close to the shoulder of her opponents. She stands back and throws arm punches, and then she goes for the takedown. It's lights out. Like, she's wrapping the legs like Khabib up against the cage. I was really, really impressed by Lucindo with her groundwork, the way that she's able to flow through positions, multiple takedowns in fights. She doesn't really slow with her wrestling as the fight goes on. Her striking gets more labored, for sure. But I really did like what I saw. And oh, by the way, she's only 20 years old, too.
And that's my big issue with Lucindo. It's not necessarily about her game right now. It's her age and her experience factor at this level. Like, Song Yadong is one of the few fighters I can think of who came in when he was 20 years old, and we still know who he is right now. Like, you guys probably know who Sage Northcutt is, but you've never watched him fight in a UFC octagon.
My only, you know, kind of zig to zag where you're going with this, she did beat old Sarah Froda. Down on the regional scene, I did like that. And her last win over Rhea, over with, what was it?
She looked good in her last win, I will give you.
And that was a fighter that had a win on Dana White's Contender Series as well.
But Sarah Flota is a fighter who missed weight in the UFC and did not look great at all. So I will agree with you. Lucindo did look good in her last matchup.
I think Lucindo has a ground advantage over, and it's going to be weird. I think she has a ground advantage of strawweight over a lot of different fighters. I think she's going to make it really interesting. And in this matchup, I think she has a distinct advantage because Yasmin Jauregui was getting ready for a fight against Estela Nunes. The fight was called off July 14th. Carlos Contreras Legaspi tweeted that Lucindo is in on the matchup. So Jauregui already had a camp going for somebody who only strikes. Estela Nunes is a terrible grappler in this division defensively.
Oh, yeah, I would agree.
So it's striker versus striker. It's a fun fight. It's boxer versus kickboxer. It would have sold tickets, butts and seats at the Apex or Pechanga Resort and Casino outside of San Diego. But now in this matchup, you got to get ready for a grappler in Lucindo. Lucindo is already getting ready for a lot of different strikers.
Lucindo's not Damian Maia, though.
No, but she's pretty damn good at this women's strawweight division.
So the short notice, the it is what it is type of nature for Lucindo, her last time out, takes on Brogan the Bear Walker. And if you do look at that fight, I mean, she was a minus 360 favorite against Walker. She goes out there, all three judges scored at 30-27. Purple belt in BJJ for Lucindo, brown belt for Pollyanna Viana. And I'll be interested to see. I mean, do the jiu-jitsu belts really even equate to much in this fight? Is it like a Habib's a white belt type of situation? I guess that remains to be seen. In this matchup, though, it'll be interesting because if Lucindo decides to follow Viana to the ground, she could get herself caught. Viana is a very good striker down the middle. You saw that her last time out against Jinyu Fry. Multiple unanswered strikes in that blitz, and Viana gets the knockout win. So when it comes to this one, I ever so slightly am going to go with Yasmin Lucindo. Matt as well in this one, but really interested to hear your thoughts on this fight because women's strawweight got the club going up on a Tuesday, and you got a title fight coming up with Lamos challenging. A lot of moving pieces in this division. Really want to hear from you, your thoughts on this one. I'm chilling. We're on the water. We got some big time fights left on this card. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. The wind, the waves, it is wavy right now. Listen, it's getting dark. It looks like it's going to rain. I'm out here on the kayak. I'm talking fights with you folks here with Fight Night Picks. As always, Craig Allen at Craig Allen FNP. And when we look at our next fight, this one at light heavyweight. It's a light heavyweight debut of Kyle's brother. It's Chris Daukaus. Couple of main events to his name in the UFC. And he's taking on the Ultimate Fighter finalist. Wasn't successful. Khalil Roundtree Jr. And when you look at it, both of these guys combined 5 performance of the night bonuses, and Chris Daukaus burst on the scene, maybe not even in the UFC debut, taking on Parker Porter, but beating Rodrigo Nascimento as a big underdog, and that really set things up. Couple of knockdowns in that fight, he continued to win. Couple of knockdowns against Shamil Abdurakhimov, but for Chris Daukaus, it's been a rough road in his last 3 fights. He's lost all 3, and then you flip the other side of the coin, look at Khalil Roundtree, 3 straight wins, he's looked amazing. The Carl Robertson fight was the one where he's dropping Robertson. I counted 4 knockdowns in that fight. UFC, I think, only credited him with maybe 2 of them. But if you watch that one, that's a performance bonus. The soccer kicks, it was crazy. But for Roundtree's last time out, he takes on Dustin Jacoby, and he won a very controversial split decision in that one. And that's the trouble with Carl Robertson. And that is the trouble, I guess, with Khalil Roundtree Jr. as well. What version of Roundtree do we ultimately get? Because for Roundtree, it can be all or nothing, or it can be the reserve version with a little bit of volume striking, like we saw with Khalil when he took on Jacoby and when he took on Marcin Prachnow. And if you look at it overall for both of these guys, you consider it for Roundtree. 3 wins in a row, the Bukauskas oblique kick, he looked like his mean self. The fight against Robertson was great, performance bonus. I mean, opens it up with a big time. The first round was a dogfight. And then in the second round, it was a left cross, it was a right hook, it was a knee, and then it was another hook. Those are the 4 knockdowns that I counted. But the craziest part about it for me when I look at this fight is, not just is this Daukaus' debut at light heavyweight, and he was a guy that would weigh in, it was 242.5 his last time out. You saw like mid-230s for him as well, so maybe the cut's not going to be too bad. For Tanner Boser, it took him 1 to get acclimatized. He lost Iwan Kutsalaba, and then for Boser's last time out, he gets a win against Alexa Kamara last weekend. But when you look at this one, I mean, for Daukaus, it's a lot of boxing. And this is the craziest thing that I counted for him. 7 UFC fights, 9 leg kicks for Daukaus. And you see him in main events against Derek Lewis, against Curtis Blaydes. You see him wearing the headgear in training, sparring with brother Kyle. It's going to be interesting to see what version we get. Performance bonuses for Chris Daukaus against Nascimento, Olenek, and Abdurakhimov. A big-time fight in this one. And Matt and I split on the pick. I'm going to go with Carl Robertson to get the win because I think the leg kicks are a huge determining factor. I like the fact that Roundtree is on this big win streak, and I like the fact that Roundtree is a little bit more acclimatized at light heavyweight. So Matt going with Chris Daukaus in this one. Really like to get your thoughts on it. The wind is picking up. We have some big time fights in the car coming up this weekend. I mean, the main event, Luke A taking on RDA. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Hanging out on the river, co-main event coming up this weekend, 2022's UFC Fight Wing Hall of Fame edition. It is Cub Swanson. He's going to be taking on mean Hakeem Dawodu, the Canadian. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen, Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP, or is it X? And why am I out here paddling on the lawn? Well, it's because when I did the Dawadu fight against Cub Swanson, the audio, it got crackly. And listen, I've got one of those big fuzzy socks over the mic, but things got a little bit weird. So listen, we're going to paddle on the grass. We're going to enjoy the sights, the sounds, maybe some airplanes, maybe there'll be some dogs or some cars. But what you do have to look forward to this weekend in a co-main event, not just the fact that you have a UFC Hall of Famer, but a guy that won four WEC Fight of the Night bonuses inside of the UFC, a performance bonus in a second to last fight against Darren Elkins. And if you go up and down through the lineup and you look at everything, six Fight of the Nights in the UFC for Cub Swanson, as well as that 2016 aforementioned Hall of Fame performance against Du Ho Choi. We all remember how crazy and wild of a fight that was. But for Cub Swanson, if you just look at his last time out, takes on Jonathan Martinez, a guy on the cusp of the rankings. But that one was at bantamweight. That was Cub Swanson's first fight at bantamweight. And that's not really a move that you see a lot of 38-year-olds going for. But Swanson did it there, and it was a TKO due to leg kicks from Jonathan Martinez. And when you look at it for Akin Dawodu, trying to reverse his own fortunes, he was favored his last time out, a pretty darn big favorite against Juicy J, Julian Arosa. And for Akin Dawodu, it didn't really go all that well. First of all, came in at 149.5. You hate to see it, but for Dawodu, it was what it was. And he tended to slow down throughout the performance. So we'll have to see how the weight cut affects Dawodu in this one. If you go find him on Instagram, he's looking pretty darn yoked up. So we'll see how he makes out in this fight. But the other point to kind of talk about here, for Cub Swanson, we know his protege, it's Daniel Argueta, and Argueta's become somewhat of a big deal at 135 pounds. I wonder if in this fight, again, you look at Instagram, for Cub Swanson, is the facial hair any indication of what we're gonna get out of Swanson? Maybe I should have my life jacket buttoned up. I am, of course, on land on this one. But if you do look at this matchup, I mean, it's a big-time fight. For Akin Dawodu, he was all the flash and flair, undefeated coming into the UFC. He had that really early career win when he was 23 against 22-year-old Mike Malott. And that one, obviously, it still makes waves because you got a guy still competing at 145 versus a guy who's the talk of the town at 170. UFC 289 was definitely a big-time turning point for Mike Malott. He had the Canadian fans behind him. They were singing Sum 41. You love to see it. But for Dawodu, he has that early loss to Danny Henry, and then he's got to build it forward. And so he picks up a lot of wins by split decision, lose to Movsar Ivleev with the wrestling. But his last time out, I mean, it was just a tough one against Julian Arosa. So we'll see how he's able to reverse his own fortunes in the matchup. You do consider it, the spinning wheel kick was a performance bonus for Cub Swanson when he took on Darren Elkins. And when you look at this overall landscape of a division at 145, great opportunity for both of these men. But for me, it's not just the fight that Swanson had his last time out against Jonathan Martinez with the leg kicks, but you look at Akin Dawodu on the flip side, it is 13 leg kicks against his last opponent, Arosa, 29 against Mike Trezano in a win, 6 against Evleev in a loss, but you got to worry about the wrestling, 24 against Zubair Tukugov in a win, 15 against Julio Arce, 11 against Yoshinori Horii, 17 against Kyle Bochniak, and then 39 against Austin Arnett. When you have the leg kicks rocking from Akin Dawodu, the Muay Thai specialist, that's when things go extremely well for him. So when it does come down to this fight, I mean, the aging legend in Cub Swanson, I don't necessarily have him to get the win in this matchup. I know Matt is in agreement on this one. Both of us going with the Canadian. Akin Dawodu, really interested to see who we have in the fight. Again, we're paddling on land this week because the audio, it just did not turn out. Hopefully you can appreciate that. The main event though, we're back. We got our sea legs with us. We're in the water. You're going to want to check that one out. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Just like that, we are back. UFC Vegas 78, headlined by Rafael Dos Anjos taking on Vicente Luque. Luque ranked in the welterweight division number 10. In the lightweight division, somehow Dos Anjos ranked in the 9th spot. But this is a big time fight because for Luque, having to get the clearance to take this fight, it definitely took a lot. He's been away for a year, and that was his first knockout loss, his last time out against Jeff Neal. A couple of losses in a row. He also lost in a main event, and that was a rematch against Bilal Muhammad. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP. I guess it's X and Instagram. at Craig Allen FNP. Matt Allen is on vacation, so I'm out on the water, enjoying my time. Listen, the water, a good time to relax. Hopefully I don't lose my paddle. Always wearing my life jacket, keeping the sun out of my eyes with the eye black. My wife's filming for additional content on the sidelines, but this is a big time main event because speedboats, they are what they are. I'm gonna speed you up and get you ready for this fight. 23 co-main event and main event slots between these two guys. Four of them for Luque, 19 of them for RDA. We know RDA as the former lightweight champ, but what you might not know is that he's number one all time in UFC history in cage time. 8 hours, 1 minute, and 49 seconds. Behind him, by 4 minutes and change, Max Holloway, who's got a big time main event coming up against the Korean Zombie in the not so distant future. And when we look at a fight like this between Luque and RDA, Luque is a great striker. Luque is a great grappler. So is RDA. For Dos Anjos, gets it done with his wrestling. You saw it for Dos Anjos last time out. He was taking on Brian Bam Bam Barbarina. And in that one, well, A, Barbarina's a middleweight now. But B, what does RDA have to do? Do what he did against Neil Magny. And in the first round of that fight, he nearly did just that. He had the arm triangle choke. It looked like it was locked in. He didn't ultimately get it. In the second round, Dos Anjos gets the win against Barbarina by rear naked choke. He sunk it up against the cage, which is a tough spot to get it at the angle he was at. Dos Anjos gets it done, and gets the win. So when you look at RDA in his last four fights, he's 3-1. The loss was a fight in the night to Fazeev. One of the two judges had it 2 rounds for RDA. The other two had it scored as 39-37. That was Sal D'Amato as well as Junichiro Camijo. But a great fight in the night there, back and forth with the striking. We saw Fazeev in a tough fight against your BMF champ after that one, and that's Justin Gaethje. But if you do look at it in this matchup, I'll be interested to see what version of Luque we get, because training out of Serrato MMA, those guys get you ready for a fight. The Bonfim brothers are out of that gym. We know that Luque in the past has been a big supporter and training partner of Gilbert Burns. And if you look at it for RDA, consider where he trains up. Novo Uniao is a hell of a gym to get ready for a fight like this. Maybe not the hard sparring, but you know how good the wrestling is of RDA. It's just, can he get it done against the bigger guy in Luque? That really needs to be said. For Luque, the strike numbers throughout his UFC career, 5.49 to 5.51 significant strikes landed to receive per minute. And he's fought southpaws in the past. RDA is a southpaw as well. So let's go through it. Jeff Neal is a southpaw. Well, that fight took a year away and maybe more years off of Luque's life. Chiesa, southpaw, that's a win for Luque. Barbarina, southpaw, that's a win. Jalen Turner, southpaw, that's a win, even though that was a weird fight at 170 pounds. And Leon Edwards is a loss. So Vicente Luque actually at a positive clip against southpaws, being an orthodox fighter. He's 3-2 right there. And when we look at it for a guy like this in Vicente Luque, we just need to see a return to normalcy for him. And he draws a test where RDA is not a giant, thunderous, ginormous puncher. We've seen him close a lot of distance with his strikes. You remember his wild fight that he ended up losing against Eddie Alvarez in a fight night? That was crazy because, I mean, RDA was supposed to fight Conor McGregor. The fight falls out, and then he gets Alvarez a long time later. He loses that fight, the belt's gone. But before that, I mean, Anthony Pettis fight, that was a great win for him. And we could go really down through the list. But RDA hadn't been dropped. And dropped, I mean, yeah, he'd been finished, but he hadn't been dropped in terms of the knockdown counter in the UFC. From the debut in the UFC in 2008 against Jeremy Stephens to his fight in 2022 against Fazeev. That is insane. A legendary chin for RDA. Again, RDA minus 520 favorite his last time out. I'd love to hear from you guys and who you have in this matchup, because I think for Matt and I, split on the pick. Matt going with Vicente Luque in the main event, your ranked welterweight, and I'm going to go with RDA, the ranked lightweight. I think RDA is going to have a little bit of an advantage in the grappling, but he's definitely getting up there in age. And when it comes to years and fight years, these two guys are both really up there. Listen, a day on the kayak, enjoying it. We got the fights coming up this weekend. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the videos this week, doing something different. And the new logo, the new intro, you can always find me at Craig Allen FNP on Twitter, or what was formerly known as Twitter. On Instagram, you can find Matt at Matt Allen FNP. He's out there enjoying his European vacation. I'm out here in New Brunswick enjoying the river that is, and yeah, having a good time on the head pond. So a lot of fight action to look forward this weekend. You can always find us here, and question mark kicks coming up this weekend as well. 2 hours before the prelims, you're not gonna wanna miss any of the action. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it.